policy was not, in fact, just what they wished, just what they bargained for. Recognize that the policy, nothing which happened in this case, there's no evidence that any fact occurred that would make there have been a breach of policy conditions. That is, this isn't a case about wrongful cancellation of an insurance policy or a case about the breach of any policy term or any contract term. The policy terminated according to its provision. Recognize that there's also no evidence of proximate cause. There is no evidence in this record that the agency could have done anything once that policy was issued to prevent exercise of a termination provision. There's no evidence in this record that once the initial policy was terminated, the agency could do anything to decide which carrier was selected as the second carrier. Without that type of evidence, there's no evidence that anything the agency did proximately caused these damages, because by their own tacit admission, the damages all spring from a termination as per policy terms. So recognize, there's simply no evidence by which this court can reinstate the jury verdict. To that extent, the standard which the Court of Appeals applied would be irrelevant or immaterial. But notice that the standard that the Court of Appeals applied can't be dismissed as being wrong per se. The Court of Appeals, given the state of affairs in this case, and that is that their only pleadings, the only way they could obtain a judgment is by virtue of our having done something that caused termination. The Court of Appeals had a right to look to Faith May's uncontroverted judicial admission that she knew going into the deal that the policy could terminate as to the whole group, that she understood that, that she had been advised as to policy provisions. Given that state of affairs...
Counsel, did the Court of Appeals misstate the record when it states that there was undisputed evidence in this case that shows that the mayors were fully aware of the termination by containing the policy they chose? Is that a misstatement by the Court of Appeals?
No, Your Honor, that is not. It's borne out by the record. Ms. May actually testified that she knew when the policy was procured that the carrier would always have the right on 31 days notice for the policy to terminate the policy as to the entire group. And there's no evidence in this record that the termination was anything other than as to the entire group. I would suggest that that is a correct statement of this record, that the undisputed evidence shows they were fully aware of that termination right.
How about the other statements that Court of Appeals make as undisputed, where they can test as being erroneous?
Every one of those statements is correct. And I would suggest to Your Honor that the important thing is that those statements can be looked at simply as the converse of stating that there is no evidence that the Mays were not fully aware. And secondly, there's no evidence that the Mays were not as aware of the possibilities for a shifting of underwriters as the present agency. Third, it's identical, the way they stated the third sentence, to stating there's no evidence that Preston did anything to cause or contribute to the termination of the policy. That's borne out by the record. What have they told you today? It's not anything that goes to any of those circumstances. They tell you that the Mays were considered as orphans. They cannot tell you how indeed that did anything to cause a termination of the policy. The policy had already been issued. That's undisputed. They can't show any proximate cause. Secondly, they can't even show any duty that the fact that orphans or not would relate to on our behalf. They don't tell this court how that relates. They simply throw up a fact, and that's been their technique all along, to throw up some facts like this that don't relate to the proximate cause issue, don't relate to the breach of any duty, and hope that the smokescreen obscures the court's view. In fact, there is no evidence. What else do they tell you? The only duty they try to talk about is arrived at from Mr. Wiley, one of the agent's representatives' testimony as the three things he ordinarily does in the course of procuring insurance. They try to tell you that that sets up the duty that's applied to agencies. I would strongly urge that's not the case. The issue of duty is one of law for this court, and it is not gauged or not by whether any individual agent does exactly what he says he normally does. But be that as it may, there's no evidence in this record that Mr. Wiley didn't do all three steps that he normally does. And they have not shown you any evidence that he didn't do those three things. So again, the only duty that they cite to you, which is really no duty at all in law, they've not presented any evidence that that duty was breached. If I could, I'd like to go briefly and touch again on the standard of review question that the Court of Appeals discussed. Recognize that the Court of Appeals can consider the entire record, even on a no evidence point, when the consideration is necessary to determine the reasonableness of inferences which the plaintiffs wish you to draw. This case is a case which they necessarily have to live or die on an inference that because a policy terminated according to its very stated, written, bargain for provisions, that the agency, the agent that presented that policy to the plaintiff is negligent. Without any more evidence, they have to rely on an inference, a very, very tenuous inference. The Court of Appeals, given that state of affairs, was entitled to look to Faith May's judicial admission that she knew about the termination provision going in, that it was bargained for. The Court of Appeals was entitled to weigh in the balance that misrepresentation had been found against the plaintiffs. Again, not as evidence affirmatively in the no evidence test, but as the context in which the reasonable inference, the reasonableness of the inferences is judged. So you just simply can't allow the petitioner to tell you that because the Court of Appeals mentions, merely mentions, a fact which can be construed favorable to us means that they didn't and couldn't have correctly applied the no evidence standard. In fact, they did. In fact, all those statements are correct, and it's correct to state them in equivalent terms as there being no evidence of any of those circumstances. Unless they can tell you that they have a right to a jury verdict and a judgment without any evidence of any of those circumstances being presented to the jury, they've simply failed to support that jury verdict. They've failed to impugn the Court of Appeals' reasoning and analysis. Going on to the damages question, if I could, they wish to raise the oral testimony of Bobby Sharp, the Texas Children's Hospital administrator, as being testimony that this court is entitled to credit as showing that there were more unpaid bills. The testimony was deposition excerpts read into the record, which established only the total fees charged by Texas Children's Hospital and then payments by Keystone. The only way any court can view that evidence as evidence of unpaid bills is to infer that there were no other payments. I would tell this court again that before that inference can be credited, the entire record is available to look at its reasonableness. That includes the absolutely uncontroverted exhibit testimony, exhibit proof of certified copies of canceled checks totaling over $100,000 in payments by the Hermitage to Texas Children's Hospital. That totally negates the reasonableness of any inference that Bobby Sharp testified that there were any unpaid medical bills at all. Given that, we suggest that the only evidence of unpaid medical bills is the documentary proof. And taking the documentary proof submitted by the plaintiffs themselves and by simple virtue of rote matching checks to bills and eliminating double counting of bills, and it's all done in the summaries provided as the addendum to their application, also in our brief to the Court of Appeals, you see that the undisputed evidence, evidence that doesn't require any credibility determination at all, evidence doesn't require, that's not impugned at all, evidence that the courts must take as established, shows that there were only at most $19,000 of unpaid medical bills. That's setting aside our arguments that on some of those issues, they didn't even bother to present any proof in law as to necessity or reasonableness of those medical expenses. That's giving them every benefit of the doubt. It comes up that short. Regardless of what this court does, it should affirm the Court of Appeals. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you, counsel.
That's a brilliant argument if this is an insufficiency of the evidence review. To talk about inferences adverse to the jury verdict is great if it's an insufficiency of the evidence review. But you've got to draw all of the inferences in favor of the jury verdict.
But if Ms. Mays testified she knew that the policy could be terminated, how can you infer the opposite?
Well, but she testified, Your Honor, that she understood it could be terminated if all of the book of business was terminated at one time. Now, there was a letter sent out to claim that they had terminated the entire book of business, but the striking fact of the case was this was the only one that wasn't magically picked back up. So there's an inference again. And there goes their argument on inferences. But again, let's go farther than that. Assume that's true. That's a matter of her negligence to have been submitted to the jury. Then that wasn't an issue on it. And there was a swearing match over the extent of what she did
be negligent by failing to get a policy that would have better protected her. You mean you could somehow be liable for not getting a better policy?
You have to understand that the first thing about this case is that Miss May testified that when she went in, she told the man what her problems was and that there was only one policy that he ever discussed with her and told her to get it. So that there's a swearing match at the very start about the extent of the disclosures made to her about the policy.
Well, that's fine, but my question was, how can a person be negligent by by accepting a policy which they shouldn't have accepted?
But wouldn't it be necessary if I'm suing you for saying you put me in the wrong one, if they wanted to get a jury issue on that, which is the other side of that, isn't it necessary that they plead, well, you were negligent too because you knew as much as I did?
How can you be negligent in accepting something that you shouldn't have accepted?
Well, I agree that you can't. That's my point is that the agent would at least owes a duty to exercise the care that he has. He was the person that had the information. He's the one that told the question to get in, and he only showed her one. So even if she says, yeah, okay, I read that and knew that was in there, under my analysis of the case, and they keep trying to try a case I didn't try. He's the agent with the knowledge. We all agree he at least owes him ordinary care to exercise the judgment that he knows and the knowledge that he has. And so I agree that it's irrelevant what she knew or what she didn't know. I think it's absolutely irrelevant in this case in the context of negligence. Now, again, they keep wanting to talk to you in their presentation about what the plaintiff doesn't tell you. But that's nothing but a blatant attempt to try a lawsuit that wasn't tried in the district court and it wasn't reviewed by the appellate court. Because if I can take the one issue that I got a jury answer on and I can show you that there's evidence to support that jury's answer, then the other case that I didn't prove is irrelevant.
Well, let's go to the damages, just very specifically, and I know this is in the record, but they say that the Children's Hospital administrator only said that one agency did not pay these claims.
No, sir. That is a mistake.
If that were correct, then you could look, I would suppose, to cancel checks from someplace else.
But that's a mistake.
Okay. I just want to get that nailed down. That's...
She was asked what's the total of payments from any and all sources. That's just a flat misstatement.
What about the canceled checks they say they compare?
Well, Your Honor, like I said, that's a great analysis if this is an insufficiency of the evidence point. Because then you get into credibility and what's best. But where it's no evidence point, and Bobby Sharp said, I got $136,000 worth of unpaid medical bills, that's it, if all your points is no evidence point. Because she's flatly testifying and contrary to what they've got documents that they produced say. And if they wanted to raise that, they all went to the Court of Appeals and filed an insufficiency of the evidence point, not a no evidence point. But you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't not run the risk of going back and being tried for fraud again if you don't want to take that step. And so they made the bet that they lie in by the way they framed the relief they wanted in the Court of Appeals. And to stand up here and tell you, as they have to tell you to get you to buy what they're trying to get you to buy, that the standard of review that the appellate court uses is immaterial, is ludicrous. That would free the appellate courts of this state to review whatever they want to review, how they want to review it, and you have no power to review it. So you want to write an opinion and sign it, Justice Cook, that says, well, the standard of review that the appellate court uses is really immaterial in cases. And that's the reasoning they've got to advance and get you to buy for them to be successful in this case.
Counsel, issues that draw here as to what you have on the board. You say that these are Court of Appeals misstated the record, and they say, no, they did not.
In parts of it. I started about down in here.
I started at the top. Right. The very first clause was wrong.
They said not.
I don't think that the Mays, I think there's a swearing match over the extent of the knowledge the faith may have by determination of laws or understanding. I think that that's a swearing. In the context of it, it's just flat wrong and misstatement of the evidence in the record. Down in here it is. Up in here, we're saying this is uncontroverted. That's wrong because there is a swearing match in the record on the extent of what she knew about the termination clause. So to that extent, it's wrong. This up here is a matter of interpretation, but it shouldn't be an insufficiency of the evidence point. This stuff down here is just wrong.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument and the three clauses submitted today. These clauses are submitted on briefs and oral arguments, and the marshal will please adjourn the court.
Please rise. Oh, yay, oh, yay, oh, yay.